Motor City Riffs. Motor City.
Hey, did you hear? Huh? Did you hear?
Yeah, what?
Foursomes are registering for the 8th annual Arthur P. Golf Scramble.
Yippee. A golf outing.
Are you kidding? This is huge. The legendary WRIF Arthur Penhallow Golf Scramble is bigger, better, and bolder. I'm talking prizes, music, golf.
I can hardly wait.
Waiting's not an option. Foursomes need to register now at WRIF.com.
This bigger, better, bolder golf scramble, is it in our lifetime?
It'll be Rockin' Devil's Ridge Golf Club in Oxford, August 31st.
You're pretty geeked about this, aren't you?
Golfing with Big Daddy Arthur P. If I could, I'd book a foursome right now.
Aren't you overlooking something?
I don't know. Arthur P., a golf scramble, Devil's Ridge, August 31st, prizes, music, teeing up, what?
We're golf balls, Nimrod.
What? Oh, yeah. Never mind.
Book your foursome now for the 8th annual Arthur P. Golf Scramble at WRIF.com. Sponsored in part by Lady Jane's with haircuts for men at only $15. Three locations, including 13 Mile and Harper and St. Clair Shores.
Baby!
You're on the way to a better day when you think Ford first.
Ford is the number one selling brand in Metro Detroit. And now, during the Ford Model Year Clearance, AZ-Con customers can lease a 2006 Ford 500 for only $215 a month. It's a great deal. And with optional side airbags, it's the only large sedan to earn the top safety pick from the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. Plus, earn a 5-star government crash test rating. Lease one now for only $215 a month. Only $215 a month for 24 months through Ford credit with $2390 due at signing. Payment includes first month payment, a wage security deposit, and acquisition fees. Excludes title, taxes, and license fee. Some payments higher, some lower. Not all electric will qualify. Residency restrictions apply. Take new retail delivery from dealer stock by 83106. See dealer for details. Lease a 2006 Ford 500 now for only $215 a month.
Your Metro Detroit Ford dealers. Think Ford first.
Numbers have many meanings. Some people say it takes two to tango. Others say three's a crowd. Many think seven is a lucky number. But at Health Alliance Plan, we found a new way to use the number one. Introducing Solo, powered by HAP. Solo is affordable and flexible health coverage for individuals and families. Whether you're graduating from college, self-employed, between jobs, retiring early, or just want better coverage for your loved ones, a Solo plan from HAP can give you what you want. Comprehensive plan designs include PPO options, health savings accounts, online enrollment, and above all, prices that fit your budget. So if you're looking for a great healthcare plan, go Solo and get powered by HAP today. You can learn more and apply for Solo at www.hap.org. That's www.hap.org. Solo products are offered through Alliance Health and Life Insurance Company, Inc., a wholly owned subsidiary of Health Alliance Plan.
Hello.
Quit your jibber jabber.
Is this Mr. T?
I know it's hard to believe, but it's true.
Wow, I'm talking to Mr. T. I saw you on TV recently. You were promoting On Demand with Comcast Digital Cable.
I know it's hard to believe, but it's true.
Yeah, I guess it's hard to believe. I didn't realize you could get a library of free movies, shows, kids' programs, and more that you can watch whenever.
Do you live in a cave?
What kind of question is that?
Where'd you grow up? Loserville?
Loserville? No, I just love how there's always something to watch on demand.
Quit your jibber jabber.
Is this really Mr. T?
Quit your flibber flabber.
This is not Mr. T.
Get Comcast Digital Cable with On Demand for just $33 a month for 1 year when you also subscribe to Comcast Digital Voice and High-Speed Internet. Just call 1-888-COMCAST. Comcast Digital Voice and High-Speed Internet available for $33 per month each. Limited to new customers. Not available in all areas. After promotional period, regular rates apply. Activation fee may apply. Equipment taxes, franchise, and telephone fees extra. Comcast Digital Cable required for on-demand programming subject to change. Other restrictions apply. Limited time offer. Call for details.
Welcome to the award-winning Night Call, the Riffs Phone-In Talk Show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much, and welcome to another broadcast of Night Call. Please join us, 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. Night Call brought to you this hour by Waking Up, Metro Detroit's sweatshop free clothing store. It's located in the Universal Mall at 12 Mile Road in DeQuinder and Warren. You can go to their website, wakingupstore.com. Please join me out there on Saturday, September 16th. They are sponsoring the Waking Up Green Expo. I'm going to be giving a little talk. More details as we get closer and closer to it. All right, 313-298-WRIF for our phone-in talk show. email at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And, boy, you got a lot of stuff to talk about, as usual. Thought we'd talk about Katrina. Imagine that. It's almost a year later. No hurricanes yet, but, sex and religion. That's always great for talk shows, although it doesn't really pull your chain that much, does it? But we'll talk about sex. Actually, it's about sex and religion together. More on that, though. Support our OOPS. We will get into that as well. Best news of all, mostly it's bad news, as usual. Kind of bad news. But all of us that have been paying attention are so thankful. Federal District Judge Anna Diggs Taylor for declaring the Bush warrantless wiretap program to be unconstitutional. Well, gee, I mean, did you really have to be a constitutional lawyer to figure that one out? I mean, there is a Fourth Amendment. You know that deal where you have to have a warrant to search whatever? And we're in the modern age now, so we have to search, they can search electronically. Well, they understood that, the people running things. And when they saw what Nixon had done back in the 70s, they enacted a law. And I have it here? I never can remember it. The Federal Intelligence Surveillance Act. 1978, way back then, almost 30 years ago, and they call it FISA, you know, for the letters of the act. And it's a FISA law. It's a secret court. Now, that's pretty spooky in and of itself, because one of the things the Founding Fathers didn't like was these, what they called star chamber courts, if you remember English history at all, where they'd have secret courts. They didn't have open courts. Well, the Congress at that time thought that intelligence was... sensitive enough that we could make an exception here. So what happened when Bush wants to wiretap me, Peter Werby? He has to go to FISA court. He doesn't say, he's got to give some reason. He's got to say, I'm in touch with so-and-so. He can't say, I don't like this guy. Talks bad about me every Sunday night. If he ever substitutes on these nationally syndicated liberal networks, he's doing the same thing. We want to listen in on him, see if we can get the goods on him. We don't know what he's done. But you can't do that. You have to go in front of the FISA court and say there's a compelling reason why we can violate someone's privacy. Because, as you know from high school civics, the Founding Fathers were really wary of government. Because about 99.9% of it up till then, in 1789 and all that, the governments were tyrannical. I mean, they didn't begin democratic 4,000 years ago. They began as tyrannies. They began as this pyramid-shaped racket to support the rich, and they had all kinds of little mechanisms there. If you got out of hand, they had an armed body of men, which essentially is the political state. Then they sanctified it. They invented these religions that would say that the king or the lord or they had lots of names for them. But they were divinely ordained. They didn't just happen to be up there on the top of a pyramid or a ziggurat or standing in some fancy palace because they were just like you and me. They were different. They were ordained from the particular heaven, which whatever was going on at that particular time. So the state began as a tyrannical racket, and about 99.9% of its history since then, even with the advent of the United States and other democracies, has still been that. And we're creeping back more and more towards that with this Bush racket that's in power right now. But what the mechanism is of trying to, rather than extend democracy, extend one-man rule, like most of the time it's been, you have exercises like this where Bush says, I have the right to wiretap anybody I want because you said I could invade Afghanistan. Some cockamamie reason. Well, thankfully, for our own Anna Diggs Taylor, who's from Detroit, and who ruled that, in fact, Bush can't do that. She said that the program violated both the Fourth Amendment, and also it violated a 1978 law that requires warrants from a secret court for intelligence wiretaps involving people in the United States. Now, Bush said, I would say those who herald this decision simply do not understand the nature of the world in which we live. Yeah, right. This federal judge doesn't understand the world that we live in. I don't understand the world that we live in. Only Bush does. Now, we know what a bright guy he is. We know all the great decisions that he has made. We know about all the competent people that he's put in office to help us with things like intelligence and floods and the rest of it all. So he knows, we don't, the court doesn't. Do you really think that George W. Bush knows much about constitutional law? Do you really think George W. Bush knows more about constitutional law than Judge Anna Diggs Taylor? I don't think so. But he also says, if Al-Qaeda is calling into the United States, we want to know why they're calling. You go, whoa, screw the Constitution. Every once in a while, you got to let that stuff go because niceties, legalities, we don't want anybody blowing us up again. So what the hell? Trash the Constitution, give more power to the president. He's got this theory called the unitary executive, which is a fancy way for saying dictatorship. The only thing is, you don't need this. You don't need it at all. You know, and anyway, what do you think? Al-Qaeda's going to, hello, here's what we're going to do. All right? On August the 29th, we're going to, da-da-da. No, that's not, they're not communicating like that. They know they're being watched. They know they're being tapped. Thing with, like, transfer bank funds and all that. They're, I mean, we can't have them be the evil geniuses and think that they're going to give their plans over the telephone or over the internet. They always say, or chatter on the internet. And, you know, sort of this racist thing there, you know, blah, 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 in Arabic, you know, right? And all of this is, you know, we kill infidels, you know, we kill crusaders and all that. And that doesn't work like that. If they're evil geniuses, let's look at the noun. They're geniuses. They're able to create these kind of structures and networks much on to counterintelligence. If they're evil dopes, oh, that's a different thing. But they have, you know, they've been able to carry out some pretty heinous acts and pretty much escape apprehension. Al-Qaeda. Remember that guy, Osama bin Forgotten, that he was going to be brought back dead or alive? Well, he hasn't been brought back either way. So thank you to Judge... Will it make it all the way up through the Supreme Court where it's packed with Bush's buddies? I don't think so. Well, we'll see. We'll see. By the way, the email here is calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Aaron is listening in Girdwood, Alaska. Girdwood, Alaska is where Aaron is listening. And he says, I just wanted you to let you know about a website that a buddy of mine and I just launched in support of Judge Anna Diggs Taylor and her landmark ruling against the Bush administration's warrantless wiretap program. She will no doubt come under baseless criticism from those who are more interested in supporting a corrupt administration than justice and the rule of law as defined by our Constitution. Please encourage your listeners to visit our site, judgetaylor.org, T-A-Y-L-O-R.org, judgetaylor.org, and offer words of encouragement to this brave American civil servant. Yeah, glad to get that on for you. By the way, the Fourth Amendment says, I won't read the entire thing because it, in the middle of it is the key language, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects. Unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation. Now, what's the argument? Well, what if Al-Qaeda says, you know, we're going to bomb Detroit in an hour. We're going to do it in an hour. And then you imagine them, they have to go over to some court and they have to, you know, before they can you know, even listen in on it and plead with these bureaucrats, and then they think about it for 6 days, and then in the meantime we've already suffered the damage. That's, you know, that's sort of the argument. Well, they don't. They can, if they get some information that's critical, that's crucial, they can, without a warrant, tap a line. Do surveillance, whatever's necessary to protect us. So that's already there in the 1978 law. This is just a lie of Hitlerian proportions that Bush is putting forth, that they can't wait around for warrants. Then what they have to go to court after it's done and say, look, this was an emergency of incredible proportions. We already tapped this line. Here's the evidence. Here's from our intelligence sources. Here's from our informers. Here's what we picked up electronically. Can we get approval, please? Well, one of you may have the information of the hundreds, maybe thousands of requests that have been made in the last 30 years. There's something like 6 of them have been turned down, or 8, or some 12, 14. Nothing. I mean, less than 1%. So this is all about power. This is all about trashing the balance of power that we learned about in civics, that so fearful were the founding fathers of unbridled governmental power, because they'd seen it all, that they put all these safeguards in here. And here's one man trying to destroy it. You can say, oh, he's got all these other horrible guys, Gonzalez and Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney, and yeah, they're pretty bad news for the Constitution as well. But Harry Truman had a sign that said the buck stops here. In other words, he was the man. George W. Bush, you can call him an idiot, someone who doesn't know what they're talking about, is not suited for the job. He has the job. He may have stolen 2 elections in a row, however you want to cut it, but the man is the president of the United States with a big capital P. Every program, every policy decision is his, and he's responsible. And I would say, if Anna Diggs Taylor is correct, which I would say she is, that the program violated the Fourth Amendment, and also the 1978 FISA law, these are high crimes and misdemeanors and an impeachable offense. ITMFA. That's what I say. ITMFA. If you don't know what that means, you can go to itmfa.org. But let me forewarn you that it has rude language on it. So if you shock easily, don't do it. All right. All the other things. You know, there's something in the human psyche that once you get past violence and theft and all that, that we hate the most in a person is hypocrisy. And what more typifies these right-wingers, and also in particular these right-wing Christians, than hypocrisy? Because they're always with all this morality. And how many of these people do we have to find hanging with a hooker or any number of other crimes of moral turpitude, as they say, before we realize that these people are pieces of work and that they are such a pack of twistoids in which we could have compassion for them? Well, actually, we should have compassion for them, but we actually could have compassion for them if they would just butt out of our lives. If they would let us do things that don't hurt other people without their moralizing and attempt to have the political state enforce their twisted view of everything from biology to everything. All right. Here's some by the way, if you're ringing 313-298-WRIF, have patience and we'll get to your call in just a second. ChristianNet poll finds that evangelicals are addicted to porn. Pornography, in other words. And it's a Christian, it's actually like ChristianET, the word Christian and ET, or ChristianNet.com. Very bizarre little site that I checked out just to make sure this was happening. World's most visited Christian website, ChristianNet.com, conducted a survey asking site visitors 11 questions about their personal sexual conduct. Amazingly, there were 1,000 responses to the poll conducted by ChristianNet.com. By the way, that figure, you say 1,000 people, how can you judge millions by 1,000? Well, that's about the level of, why can't I think of any of the polls? Yeah, the CBS poll or something like that. That's how many people they get. There are 1,000 responses to the poll. And the ChristianNet.com has partnered with Second Glance Ministries in evaluating the poll responses, and it seems the Christian community is struggling with many of the same, quote, temptations that the secular society is faced with. Why are they struggling with it? I mean, a lot of people look at pornography, I suppose, as a substitute for sex. So I don't know that people that don't have these is that the second time I've used that word tonight as an adjective? I won't use it again. Sorry. If they're not just a flame with sexual desires and thinking that they're evil and devil driven, they're just watching it, or they're looking at porn and wishing they had the real thing. Okay, I mean, if everyone was fully, I mean, I wouldn't say this is entirely true, but if there was full sexual gratification in this society, their pornography would probably drop off by about 80%. I would say. You tell me. 313-298-WRIF. Clay Jones, founder and president of Second Glance Ministry, whose ministry objectives include providing people with information which will enable them to fully understand the impact of today's societal issues, says the poll results indicate that 50% of all Christian men and 20% of all Christian women are addicted to pornography. Now, we don't know what these freaks mean by addicted. I mean, they might just look at it. And I'm sure they think if you look at it, you're probably addicted to it. They've got odd views of everything they don't like or don't think that people should do. But and actually, their rates may be no different than non-Christian men and women. Let's see here. 60% of the women who answered the survey admitted to having significant struggles with lust. I don't struggle with lust at all. The more the better. I mean, you can get out of control with it, I admit. 40% admitted to being involved in sexual sin in the past year. Whew. Again, I don't know what these people mean by that. Sometimes they just mean doing it is a sexual sin. And 20% of the church-going female participants struggle with looking at pornography on an ongoing basis. And let's see, Reverend Jones says, technology, the internet has allowed pornography to flood the marketplace beyond a controllable level. Well, that's sure true. So, actually, I have this in a section called Religion Today. What else do I? All right, so that's kind of the fun stuff. Anybody struggling with pornography, want to tell us a story about it, 313-298-WRIF. More pharmacists are refusing to give emergency contraceptives. Healthcare providers in New York have filed complaints against two pharmacies for refusing to fill prescriptions for Plan B emergency contraception, commonly known as EC, or the morning after pill. So these are the complaints by the New York Civil Liberties Union on behalf of Planned Parenthood employees that pharmacists at CVS and Rite Aid stores, this is a little mom and pop store, violated state laws in 2005 and 2006 when they refused to fill prescriptions for the drugs or even refill them. Now, here are men and maybe women as well that clearly make up what I call the compulsory pregnancy movement. This is a drug that can block pregnancy if you take it the morning after and quick enough. But they are going to decide. They're going to, instead of the woman deciding, they're going to decide for them. And so this is where these authoritarians are at, the compulsory pregnancy movement. Yeah, a few other things, but religionists are often so self-righteous. As I always say, to get out of this, that I know the most decent Christians and Jews and Muslims that are just a, unfortunately, probably a footnote to their way people have acted in their religions all throughout history. But there's good people around. Randall W. Harding sang in the choir at Crossroads Christian Church in Corona, California, donated part of his conspicuous wealth to his ministries. He had business dealings. He had an investment firm called JTL, Just the Lord. So here was a man that that was blessed, and he helped others to bless, be blessed as well. But turns out that he was ripping everybody off for more than $15 million from their clients. And is this an anomaly? Is this an oddity? Well, it turns out that billions of dollars has been stolen in religion-related fraud in recent years, according to the North American Securities Administrators Association, a group of state officials who work to protect investors. Between 1984 and 1989, a while ago, about $450 million was stolen in religion-related scams. In its latest count, from 1998 to 2001, the toll had risen to $2 billion. Rip-offs have only become more common ever since. Now, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people that get a lot of solace towards through religion. The priests and rabbis and imams and all that provide a lot of services to people as well. But it has such a high incident of corruption that it's extraordinary. If you go to the Freedom From Religion Foundation website, let me see, Freedom From Religion, FFRF.org, org. They have a section. I don't know if it's up on that line, but they have something called black collar crimes. You know, white collar crimes, and this is black collar crimes. They have page after page after page of the crimes that ministers, particularly, are and priests have been convicted of, charged with. I mean, it's extraordinary. All right. How about you? What do you have to tell us? 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Let's go to Sean. Sean's in Waterford. Hey, Sean. It's Peter Werbe. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for calling.
Great. I had a couple points. One thing is what you said a little bit ago about doing the phone research with Bush and what he's doing with that. You said that if we got a bomb call or threat in 30 minutes that we could, you know, get a quick search warrant and protect ourselves, that, you know, we wouldn't have to wait to 3 days.
Right.
Well, how would we know if there's a bomb scare or a some substance like that unless we're doing research prior to that happening?
Well, there's all sorts of manner in which we can do that. I mean, the idea that the government has carte blanche to just go into whoever they think maybe, and one of the things that's at issue here, Sean, is it's not really clear who they are tapping. Because there is some thought that they could be tapping Democrats, they could be tapping the press, they could be tapping political opponents, because we know the Pentagon had a spy program on people in the anti-war movement. That's exactly why there's that constitutional guarantee, right? And you support the Constitution, don't you?
Do you?
Well, how come you answer a question with a question? I already said I did. I asked you.
I do. But okay. It's different now, Peter. I mean, you have to come on. You have to consider what the source is now. It's not 1776 anymore.
Well, there's no. Then there has to be a constitutional amendment. I mean, let's. It's not up to one man to say I'm going to diminish constitutional guarantees because I have this philosophy that says the unitary executive can take power away from Congress, can in secrecy violate a law. That's not the way we do business in America. That's the way we do business in Romania under Ceausescu, who Bush is a lot like.
But you're wrong now. You are wrong. I'll tell you why.
Well, I said about seven things. Which one particularly?
Well, the one thing you were wrong about is I have nothing to hide, and I haven't heard anything about the Republican going after, you know, their Democratic. I work for the largest union in the country, and I
what's
support,
that?
Ask me.
Okay.
American Federation for, you know, you've heard of that before.
Sure.
And I support. I mean, I've been on the Senator John Kerry's fundraising platform, but I support what Bush is doing because I have nothing to hide, and if he can do anything he can to provide safety for our country, I'm all behind him.
Well, here's the deal, Sean. Let me just go through this again. There's no break on the ability of doing intelligence gathering. What there is when there has to be specific things involving searching, essentially, which wiretapping is, of U.S. citizens, if it's an emergency, they can do it right away and then go get a warrant. If it's not an emergency, they have to go, and the FISA court is extraordinarily compliant. Again, let me say that if the Constitution is a worn-out document that is not relevant 200-and-something years later, then it should be changed. But in the meantime, we have, if you're really, I guess, sound like a liberal, you're a unionist, you're a fellow, you know, you're a fellow unionist like I am, if you supported John Kerry like I did, you don't want these right-wingers that are trying to alter the nature of American government to be able to do whatever they want. Say, well, I didn't hear about them tapping any Democrats. Well, of course, they would be doing it in stealth. It's an impeachable defense.
This is WRIF.com.
Make up your mind.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. My personal website, peterwerby.com, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerby.com. And I hope most of you know what we're talking about, this decision by District Judge Anna Diggs Taylor declaring Bush's warrantless wiretapping unconstitutional and a violation of law, of the 1978 law that forbids that. He knew this, and he went ahead in spite of it. He didn't, like, he could have made an announcement, say, look, we're under such threat. We got to change this. Go to Congress and say, like Sean was saying, maybe the law and the Constitution are outdated. So he could have said, but the reason he doesn't, he wants power. He wants absolute power. He doesn't admire the founding fathers. He admires, Bush does, the people whose rule they overthrew, the king. King George. Ah, what a coincidence, huh? Also told you that Aaron in Girdwood, Alaska, had set up judgetaylor.org, that you could go there and find out more about our good judge and leave comments. And he said, thank you, from Alaska, thank you. I figure you were there in Detroit. We will hear from a number of her hometown supporters. We just put this thing up this afternoon, the site, and are getting posts from folks all over the country. In fact, a number of you have sent in messages to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And what? All of a sudden? Oh, yeah. I don't know. Somewhere in there. When I need a staff at 10, I think. But we've got Jay, our producer. Al is our phone screener. And maybe this is, you know what? I think what I'm going to do, I'm going to do something Al will appreciate, but we'll do that in a little while. Some of you have been waiting a long time. Let's go to our phones. Let's go to Mike and Klaus. And Mike, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Really good judge.
Hey, can I say hi to my little brother? He's in the hospital right now.
Yeah, sure. But turn your radio off.
It's on.
Off.
Hello.
Say hi to your little brother, quick.
Hey, Mitch. Up.
Okay, good. See you later, Mike. Let's see here. Here is Matt. Matt's in Warren. Hey, Matt, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
It's going good.
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly comment on this decision. You know, thank God there's some reasonable judges out there, you know, that are looking at this situation and just, you know, with a simple rationale, deciding this is completely insane.
Well, Matt, you used the plural. So far, we have a singular. We have one judge. Let's hope
that
it can all get through these right-wing ideologues that Bush has stuffed the courts with.
Indeed. You know, I'm glad there's at least, you know, one, but I hope there's more. You know, it really is just a slippery slope, what we're on right now, as far as what Mr. Bush is doing. It really is like something out of a bad movie that we're all stuck in. It really is just unbelievable what's happening right now.
You know, Matt, it is something out of a bad movie, and everyone's going to hate me for saying this is a bad movie, but V for Vendetta. Did you see that?
You know, yes, indeed. There is a huge amount of, you know, very similar kind of occurrences or themes.
Yeah.
You know, it really is unbelievable. That's a great example.
Except I thought it was a bad movie. I liked it. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I think I said that on the air. I thought it was a combination of the Mark of Zorro, Batman, and Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, it was actually better as a graphic novel. It was a graphic novel originally. But, you know, it really is just unbelievable, the setting. But another quick comment I had, too, just about some of Mr. Bush's policies in Iraq.
Wait a minute. I want to tell one more thing about V for Vendetta. I don't want to give it away. But it almost ended with, I thought she was going to say, or, you know, that one guy, the police detective at the end, I thought he was going to say, he almost said that, who was that masked man, right?
Yeah.
And then she gives this totally corny speech. And I know friends of mine were appalled that I said I thought it was a completely lame movie. But I enjoyed it. What the hell? I mean, what do I have to think? It's fine cinema?
There were parts that were a little out of place. I completely agree.
Yeah, and there actually was some of the stuff. What I like, my favorite parts, when the dictatorship was putting out its BS over the news, and the news, of course, compliantly said whatever the dictatorship wanted. Everybody, there's always somebody in one setting or other that would say, bollocks, you know, not believe it. I'm sorry, go ahead, Matt. What was your second point?
Just a quick comment about the whole thing in Iraq. You know, obviously this is just an unbelievable hole we're digging for ourselves. And I just wish people, particularly in Congress and the Senate, would realize that, you know, basically we're just making the world completely despise us. And it's just a matter of time until they just turn their backs on us, if we stay the course we're going.
Well, we'll be lucky if they turn their backs on us. In other words, I should have brought this, but I saw a story that was in the New York Times about this middle-class doctor and his wife who came back to their department that had been destroyed by Israel using U.S. planes. And this man, I mean, could have expressed hatred for Israel, and he was screaming against America. He said, "I will not rest till America," I forgot what he said, "till my shoe grinds into the face of Americans." So this is a middle-class guy, and he saw the wreckage that George Bush had signed off on. Believe it, the Israelis aren't going to start something of this magnitude without Bush giving the go-ahead. In fact, I don't think there's any, nobody disputes that.
Indeed, that's a great example, too, what you said for him signing off, because, you know, that seems to me like that's all it is to him. You know, he just sits in an office and signs away on something, and then the bombs start falling, and, you know, he wipes his hands of it.
Yeah, he wrecks
really
Iraq.
That's amazing.
He wrecks Iraq, he wrecks Lebanon, he wrecks the economy. And like a typical rich guy, he won't pay any of the consequences.
Oh, yeah, and he expects us to, you know, stand up and give him a standing ovation for it. It's just unbelievable. Like I said, we're stuck in a bad movie, you know?
All right, and yeah, one much, 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 much worse than V for Vendetta. All right, thanks a lot, Matt. I appreciate it. Now, are you going to get mad at me and tell me that V for Vendetta was a great movie? Cinematically, I mean, it was very interesting and all that, but... it had problems, at least I thought. Let me see, how long have... Okay, no one's been waiting a real long time, so I'll get to you. We'll do, you know, Trudy Daniels here does rock news every once in a while, and I was going to call it rock news, but actually it's all over the genres. And Al, who's our phone screener, whose nickname is Slayer, and not because he wants to kill people or has killed anyone, but because of his love for the metal band Slayer that goes back into the early 80s. They got a brand new album out called Christ Illusion. Christ Illusion. And like so many of their themes about war, suffering, death, torture, organized religion, and the connections between them all. Now, I was going to see. I said, well, let me see. Maybe I should play some of this. So I took it home. And I don't think so. You can probably listen on... why am I blocking on everything? What is it? Riff 2? Is that what it is, guys? Riff 2 Midnight Metal. Thank you, Jay Hudson. Riff 2 Midnight Metal is where you will hear Slayer. Definitely. All right. So, a new band, saying it in music. All right. Country music? So, I don't have any sympathy for this guy. I'm sorry to say, Jeremy from Livonia, who wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He's complaining because of this new country music station in Detroit. So they're going to play what the listeners wanted. He says he was thrilled. And then they took a vote on whether they would play the Dixie Chicks. Dixie Chicks, who have been forthright in their opposition to George W. Bush and the war and all of that. And so he voted yes. And then it turned out that a clear majority of the people thought just like him. And it turns out, they're not going to do it. He says he wrote them a month ago and that he never got a response. Let me see. Then today I called him to make a request, and I told him I wanted to hear the Dixie Chicks' new song, and the person on the phone told me absolutely not. So I asked him why, and he goes, "They suck," and hangs up. Whew. God. Tell you, if he worked here, Doug Bodell, our program director, co-host of Motor City Riffs, and our midday guy, knew any of us. So you called up and said, "You play Slayer?" And I said, "Slayer sucks." I'd probably be looking for a new job, but I would look for a new station. Stick with WRIF, and you can play the Dixie Chicks on your CD player. The Bruce Springsteen brand, man, this is really happening. I didn't think this was going to work for Springsteen. He, as you probably know, he has this CD out called We Shall Overcome the Seeger Sessions. And not Bob Seeger, but Pete Seeger, no relation. Pete Seeger is probably, what is he, about 86 now, I would say, or something like that. It goes way back, real leftist guy, active in the labor stuff in the late 30s and early 40s, the civil rights movement. In fact, he sang, had an album in 1963 called We Shall Overcome. Springsteen put together a 16-piece band that kind of goes somewhere between Dixieland and jazz and folk and all of this, and I saw him do it live out of DT. RTE on June 18th. One of the better shows that I've seen in my life. And now it's come out on a CD-DVD set featuring new songs, live footage, music videos, and you know all that stuff about making it and all that, which making the tour, doing the tour. I'd like to see that. And also, I was just in a record store, Record Time, up in Ferndale looking at vinyl, and they also have this out on LP. And I'm always trying to get LPs for my, not now, so not so brand new, LP turntable. And I thought, I'm going to buy it. I'm thinking, why don't I have to buy it? I already got it on CD. Okay, anything more? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I should do this. Nowhere near as well-known, but my pal David Rovix has a brand-new CD out and is beginning his U.S. tour on September 1st, The Halliburton Boardroom Massacre. Good work as usual. David is a folk singer, but he's got a band with him this time. You can go to davidrovix.com. It's R-O-V-I-C-S. All of his music is downloadable for free. Good stuff as well. All right, I'm Peter Werby. This is WRIF in Detroit. You're listening to Night Call, and our phone numbers are 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. I insult religion, I talk about sex, and nobody, I don't even get a call on it. How weird. Of course, it doesn't say what you want to talk about. I love you. Don't worry about that. All right, let's go back to our phones. It's Dustin in South Lyon. Dustin, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Hey, Dustin. No. Wait a minute. What the hell is going on here? Sorry, Dustin. You are now on the air. My apologies.
Peter, pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you, sir.
I had a couple comments, actually, but a caller earlier that was asking about George Bush's warrantless wiretaps.
Yeah.
There's actually multiple media organizations right now that are starting a lawsuit because they're with their organizations overseas that have been being tapped because of having contacts with, for instance, the BBC or other foreign media organizations.
Yeah, well, that's good. I mean, I think legally he's being attacked from all directions, and the Constitution being defended. I'm just sorry that there's not more of us functioning in a mass movement. When you have somebody attacking the foundation document of our system that guarantees the rights and liberties of the people, and you've got guys like Sean saying, well, I don't care if they tap me. I don't agree.
I mean, I completely agree. And also,
yeah. Doesn't he ever get or give phone jobs, and he wants some FBI guy with his hand in his pants listening in? Come on.
And also one other point, a little bit unrelated. I've been on hold for a while, but as far as the religion thing goes, I'm pretty close to West Bloomfield, and there's a church in West Bloomfield with unknown amounts of land, and they've had for years a sign out having land for sale, which is just, to me, blatantly a profit organization, and it just amazes me that there hasn't been any kind of an outcry over the amount of land that the Catholic Church possesses and then sells for a profit and doesn't have to pay taxes on.
I don't understand that at all. You know, there's a number of churches, well, let me say at least a few churches that pay taxes voluntarily. Why in the world are churches exempt from having to pay taxes? I don't get it. Do you?
No, I don't, and I completely agree. And honestly, I think you're doing a great public service by bringing things like this up.
Well, Dustin, thank you very much. I appreciate your call and your words. 313-298-WRIF. A couple open lines for you if you'd like to grab them. Let's go down to Monroe, the home of George Custer and Fermi II. Les, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Normally I'm not a normal listener to your show or anything, but I, just tuned in, and I like to start what I was just going to say with this quote, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
You got it.
And I'm not sure, I mean, I just turned 19, right, and I'm registering for my voter's card, all this, I'm kind of excited about it. Who voted on the Patriot Act? I mean, what on there? I didn't even hear about it until after it was already in effect. And
well,
I know that, beforehand I wasn't a registered voter or anything, but I think still the public should be notified, if nothing else, about all this stuff.
Well, at least the congressional representatives and the senators that voted on it. It was just given to us. It was about 750 pages long, and there's a lot of thought that this was prepared way in advance, that the Bush regime was just waiting for something like this to occur so that they could put this in. I mean, there's no way in the world they could have written it that quickly. But it's all part of the power grab, all part of just yanking us around by the short hairs to make us fearful.
You know what? And I think it's working to an extent. And, you know, just to the extent that it would be needed to. Because they're really milking it, you know. Because wiretaps on everything, that's the excess of it, in my eyes at least.
Yeah, well, people are starting to fight back. His popularity is down about to one-third of the population. And those are the people that if he declared martial law and said there wasn't going to be an election this November, they would support him 100%. And I don't think that's outside of the realm of possibility. I don't think it's necessarily going to happen, but hey, you never can tell. Les, thanks a lot. I appreciate you calling. All right. Bye-bye now. Some open lines at 313-298-WRIF. Here is Joe. Joe's in Wyandotte. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Peter.
Hi.
I'm a little man. I'm a little scared, a little embarrassed, man. But I love you, man. You just got done saying Fermi 2.
Yeah.
It's going to drive me insane. Guess what, buddy? It's Fermi 3. Are we not aware of this, man? They come to the Christmas party every year at my work, man.
Yeah.
I work at a banquet hall. It's Fermi 3, buddy. They're embarrassed to call it Fermi 3. Fermi 1 was written in a book, man, by George Fuller. It's called We Almost Lost Detroit. That was 1969.
Yeah, the name. You got
Fermi 2 damn near melted down quite a few years back in the 80s, man. They had the turbine, man. It was the classic China syndrome. It's a true story, buddy. I promise it's true. It was the classic China syndrome. They didn't awe. They didn't awe. What did they call it? X-ray? The turbine? The turbine was as big as a house, buddy. It went off track. They said, who's plutonium? They released plutonium into the river. Guess what? It was Buffalo's problem. It's a true story.
Yeah, just in Cleveland's.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It went downriver, right? Goes downriver.
Yeah.
But I wanted to have an environmental confab with you for a couple, 3 months, and I'm embarrassed. I'm sorry, man. I haven't listened to you, and I caught you as an afterthought tonight, man. But I want to ask anybody in the world, and I thought of you especially, buddy. Did you used to work at WABX? Didn't you?
I did back in the day,
man.
Back in the day.
In the 60s, in the middle of the night. Am I right?
I don't think it was the 70s.
In the middle of the night.
Yeah, we also had here.
15, man.
We had the Riff Rock Cafe. I used to host that.
Okay, okay. Listen, I want to have this. Does anybody in the world have heard of the the Al Gore movie, man? Have you talked about this in the last couple, 3 months?
Yeah, we talked about people.
Really? I'm sorry, man. I haven't.
No, it's okay. It's okay. It's all right. It's perfect. Yeah.
What I'm screaming about, man. All these people in the suburbs with their SUVs, you know? It's like, I wanted to ask, what happened to the gas mileage regulations? Weren't they going to go up 5-10 miles every year?
Yeah, but the deal is, Joe, that the SUVs and the pickups, they're exempt because they're like
there
trucks.
It's like a loophole. So every
it's
car
a loophole. You got
exempt.
It. You
they
got
should
it.
Be embarrassed by 30-mile-an-hour Toyotas, man. You know? Remember the little Honda Civics? What was that, about 60?
Yeah, I guess.
Know? But what gets me the worst, sorry, I live in Wyandotte right now.
Uh-huh.
They used to have trash, okay? It was $1, a bucket there. You know, it was $1 a barrel, man. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you wanted to put out two, it cost $2. So you got 50 free ones, you got 2 free trash days, but it cost $1. They gave you 50 of them.
Well, wait a minute. Two things. One, we're getting a little far afield. Secondly, I have to get these commercials in before midnight here in Detroit. So I'm just going to say thank you, Joe. I appreciate your call, and thanks for listening when you do. I appreciate that very much. Now, let me ask. He's got the name out of my head of who wrote We Almost Lost Detroit about the meltdown of Fermi 1. And this isn't Fermi 3, it's Fermi 2. Come on, you Monrovians must know that. Give me a shout. Clean that up for me a little. 313-298-WRIF. Or is he, in fact, correct? All right. Joe, though, has indicated a couple of things. We'll talk about Ford slashing production, the effect it's going to have here, and also about Greenland's ice cap, which may, after a while, be actually Greenland. Whoa.
In
And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Radio Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsors, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in the contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are not transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, 1 Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 48220.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Welcome to our second hour at 1 a.m. Eastern Time. And I say that because I know many of you are listening all over the country and all over the world, besides just here in the Detroit area, southern Ontario, and northern Ohio. And, man, isn't anybody going to tell me the deal about Fermi 1? Who wrote We Almost Lost Detroit? It wasn't George Fuller. It was something like that. I mean, I appreciate Joe from Wyandotte telling us that. And I, same thing. I try to remember all this stuff. It's not as, can't do it. Can't get it all in your brain. 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. Night Call brought to you this hour by Waking Up. Metro Detroit Sweatshop, free clothing store located in the Universal Mall at 12 Mile Road in DeQuinder in Warren. Go to their website, wakingupstore.com. Saturday, September 16th, I will be taking part in the Waking Up Green Expo out at the Universal Mall. I will be speaking. I think I'm going to... This is the title of it. I don't want to get into it right now. I was trying to talk a little about the environment. How I Stopped Recycling and Learned to Love It. I mean, it's kind of a trick title, so don't get too upset with me, anything like that. This may be an interesting call, since we just mentioned WABX. It's Pat from Washington, D.C. Pat, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Peter, this is Pat Clausen from Washington, D.C. I happen to be driving Detroit tonight on my way back to D.C. I used to be the news director at WABX in the 70s after Harvey Avchinsky.
Sure you did.
And when I was working at ABX, I was commissioned by John G. Fuller of Reader's Digest to do the legwork in Michigan on the book that became We Almost Lost Detroit.
It was John Fuller, that's right.
John G. Fuller. John died a few years ago, great writer. I'll tell you how the title of the book came about.
Sure.
I was digging into the Fermi breeder reactor accident, and I found kind of a dissident engineer inside of Detroit Edison. This was back in 1973, I want to say, 73 or 74, and he agreed to meet with me, and I was sitting at a bar in Monroe with him, and he was telling me that the accident at Fermi was far more serious than what the public had ever known.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were having a beer, I asked him, well, just how serious was it? And he leaned back in his seat, and he sighed, and he said, well, you know, we almost lost Detroit. And that's how the title of the book came about.
Wow, that's incredible. That's absolutely. What have you been doing all these years?
Well, I've been a newsman in Washington, D.C. for many, many years with NBC and CNN, and now I'm with Westwood One Radio Network.
That's great.
And I've been off defending for the last 3 years. I've been working as an investigator and as a spokesman for the attorneys who represent Dr. Stephen Hatfield, the scientist who was wrongly accused by John Ashcroft of being involved in the anthrax attacks.
Oh, yeah. And they never did catch the anthrax guy, did they? Still out there.
Well, guys, gals, whoever it might be, they're still at large. All I know is that my guy didn't have a darn thing to do with it at all.
Well, you know, Pat, there's also a song by Gil Scott-Heron called We Almost Lost Detroit.
Yes.
Yeah, a great one.
Well, the book is outstanding, and I highly recommend it to anybody who wants to understand what happened at Fermi, because we dug very deeply into that. John used the research I did on the Fermi accident and combined it with stuff he did on reactor accidents that had happened elsewhere around the world, and it was really a groundbreaking book when it came out at the time.
Well, that's fabulous, and it's great to hear from you, and great to know you're still fighting the good fight, and someday when I'm in Washington, or, you know, email me, you can do it off my website, peterwerby.com, we can catch up on old times, and people that we started talking about probably bore the hell out of our audience.
That'd be wonderful.
All right, Pat Clausen, thank you.
Keep on rocking.
I appreciate it. Yeah, some history, I guess. I mean, indeed. I should say. 313-298-WRIF. It's Ernie. Hi. I don't have your city here, but welcome to the broadcast.
Hello?
Hi, Ernie. Where are you calling from?
Hey, how you doing? I grew up in Newport right there about a mile away from the cooling towers.
Oh, boy.
No, there was never any danger growing up. It. I mean, everybody would argue with that, I guess. But from what I understand about the breeder reactor, it was cooled with liquid sodium and... And that's highly reactive with water, and that was the main problem with that one.
Uh-huh.
And the incident the gentleman from Wyandotte was talking about with the turbine, that's a totally separate system from the reactor. There was never a release of radiation on that. And the name is also definitely Fermi 2.
Yeah, sure.
I think he would want to assume that it was Fermi 3 because there was actually three different power plants there, or three reactors. But no, there's a party store named Fermi 3 nearby.
Really?
Yeah.
There's good bird
watching. Nothing to do with it.
There's good bird watching and also bird hunting down there, too.
Yes, excellent, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of wildlife reserved by the Point Mule game area there, too.
That's right. That's right. I actually used to go down there quite a bit. I haven't done it in a while, but I should check it out. Well, thank you, Ernie.
So
I appreciate
thank you.
It. Yeah,
all right, nice talking to you. Right.
Nice talking to you. Thanks for the information. 313-298-WRIF. I was going to promise something before the break. Let's do that. And what's happening? No global warming, right? Except the vast ice cap that covers Greenland, nearly 3 miles thick, is melting faster than ever before on record, and the pace is speeding year by year, according to global climate watchers gathering data from twin satellites that probe the effects of warming on the huge northern island. It's been said that Iceland should be called Greenland, and Greenland should be called Iceland, right? Yeah, that's right. There was something else I said. Oh, yeah, right. Where is that? Oh, yeah. That was a good idea, Ford, to just put everything into those big trucks and everything like that. And now they're going to now they're telling us that Ford fourth quarter production is going to be down 21%, or they're going to be producing 168,000 units from last year. Which means trouble, I would say. Ford lost $250 million in the second quarter. So what is their deal called about something forward and all that? That looks bad. So the new production plan will result in downtime this year at any number of plants, including Wixom and Wayne and Dearborn, Michigan. And so what's up with these hometown car companies? Kia is investing $1 billion in a facility on the Georgia-Alabama border. $1 billion to build Kias from Korea. They figured it out. But Ford figured, let's build these monstrous trucks that get about 9 miles a gallon or whatever. Now no one wants to buy them. I mean, I got a full-size sedan, and I'm thinking, man, this might have been too big, because my gas mileage is, what, about 20 or 21, and these days, what it costs, which is another little element, by the way. I kind of fell into my own lack of critical thinking. I'm always saying you got to maintain vigilance so you don't get run over by the spinmeisters. So I went by my local gas station on the way here, and I thought, oh, $2.79 a gallon. Wow, that's great, $2.79, because it was up to about, what, $3.13 or something like that. But that's what they keep doing. We're being gouged with these extraordinary prices, way over what refining and exploration and all this is costing the companies. I mean, you can tell that because of the expansion of their profits, record profits on all of the big producers. So what they do is they put it way up, and, you know, they put it like up $2. You go, $2, man, I can't believe it. Can't believe that it's costing us $2 a gallon. Then they drop it down to $1.79, and then they bring it up to $2.40, and we go $2.40, and then they drop it down to $2.10, and we never really get going. A couple of you have said, "Is there any movement against these high gas prices?" Because I would join it, but what they do, they just keep kicking it up higher and higher, and then dropping it down. So it's like two steps forwards, one step back, but they're always going up and up, and they want to see how long we're going to eat this. Because they probably figure, let's see if we can knock it up to $5 a gallon. I mean, these people, they are, yeah, I know it's kind of a cliche to use this phrase, but they're, you know, they're sheeple. They don't ever protest. They don't do what they do, like in France, where truck drivers block all the highways. They don't do what they do in Bolivia, where a million people get out on the streets and get rid of a president or anything like that. Whatever they give us, we'll take, won't they? Well, are we ever going to surprise him? Are we ever, ever going to surprise him? I don't know. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. 313-298-9743. And there are some open lines for you. Here's Scott in Westland. Scott, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi, Pete. Well, maybe I can get to two things. I wanted to talk about Republican tax dogma, and this is really quick, but I can illuminate the thing about Fermi 2 a little bit, too, because somebody just told you a lie about that. But, okay, what I would like to do is, you know how Republicans, you know, are claiming, oh, they repealed the small business tax, and that's going to stimulate the economy. And they're
in Michigan,
favor.
Yeah.
Okay, I hear, and you know how they talk about how the inheritance tax is now the death tax. Okay, so I am going to now redub $3 a gallon gasoline is the Republican gas tax. Okay, it's a gas tax. We're paying everybody who buys gasoline. You're paying a dollar more for gasoline every time you buy a gallon of gasoline. You're paying another dollar than you did just 12 months ago. So, okay, suppose I ran like a diaper delivery service. You know, some people still use cloth diapers. I got like maybe two vans. You know. And okay, that means that they say, oh, you know, well, we just repealed this small business tax, you know, and you know, we did you a big favor. Well, hey, I bet, you know, some accountant could probably show you how the increase in fuel prices over the last 12 months has already eaten up that break that you got on that small business tax.
Sure.
So it's idiotic. But okay, about Fermi too, people are pretty right. The most recent act in
let me just say one thing though, Scott. That I always say this whenever we talk about gas prices. We're going to be ripped off no matter where we buy our gas. But at least if you go to Citgo, Citgo is owned by the Venezuelan government, which then takes its profits and does a variety of things that corporations do with it. But it also uses it to alleviate poverty in Venezuela because it doesn't have stockholders, doesn't have a retiring CEO that's going to get $400 million in our money for his retirement package. So when I go into my local Citgo station and I fill it up and it's a man, you know, like, what is it, $42, I guess it's, I know at least it's going to alleviate some of the hideous poverty that I saw in the barrios of Caracas. All right, real quickly on Fermi 2, but quickly.
Okay, the most recent accident they had there was where they blew a turbine, you know, it destroyed itself. And what the person told you about there being no release of radiation, that wasn't exactly true. So it wasn't the reactor that went down, it was the turbine. And ironically, this is like a $100 million plant or whatever. Like I said, it stood idle for like almost 2 years, literally like a year and a half, because of this turbine going down. But remember, the turbine is a steam turbine. It's full of water.
Right.
So contrary to what most people think, because of the superheated, you know, high pressures of the superheated steam, you get micro fissures between the reactor core and the coolant system. So basically, small amounts of radioactive material do leak from the reactor core into this, you know, steam or this water, mm-hmm. into the coolant system. So what they did is they had to dump all that into an open-air holding pond.
Oh, nice.
And this took months. And so they basically ran a pump, and that's what they claimed, that before they released it into Lake Erie, that they filtered it for a couple months. I mean, so, you know.
Well, that's nice, and that's what our one caller said. Hello, Buffalo. Or we used to say, hello, Cleveland. All right, thanks for that. I appreciate it. It's very, very important that we get information that enough so that we don't sit still for when we start talking about being addicted to oil, that means we're going to start having power plants, nuclear power plants. These things, I mean, whatever you can say about its current safety, which, as Scott indicated, ain't quite as good as they claim, there is absolutely nowhere to put the waste, the hottest, most deadly, toxic substance on Earth. Right now, it's just sitting out and back down in Monroe. They have nowhere to put it. They are talking about maybe they're going to send it out to Nevada. Yeah, take all of this radioactive stuff, put it on trucks, and send it out. Of course, you know, over the highway system, don't have any accidents, don't have any terrorists, and then put it in a repository that could be on an earthquake fault. This is insanity, folks. This is true insanity, and all nuclear power ought to be shut down immediately. Here's James calling in from Kenosha, Wisconsin. James, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air in Detroit. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Peter. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for calling in.
Calling basically to notify people in this area, the Wisconsin area, Detroit, whatever, who would like to take part next Saturday, the 26th. There's going to be a rally on the steps of the Capitol in Madison. And the rally is an immigration rally. It's called America for Americans. And it's being sponsored by the National Socialist Movement, which I believe is the largest American Nazi party that we have in this country. There's going to be a counter-protest. So anybody who would like to tell the National Socialist Movement that their hatred is not welcome in Wisconsin, or anywhere for that matter, is sure welcome to join us. One of the reasons that they chose Madison, which would seem kind of odd, is the fact that James Sensenbrenner is from Wisconsin. So they thought
the Republican who has sort of the Nazi politics when it comes to immigration.
Indeed, he wrote the House bill that was passed, a very draconian law that would make felons of illegals and things of that nature.
You know what, though? Let me interrupt you. I think if you've listened to the broadcast over the years, and I believe you have from the emails that you've sent, you know that I am a big supporter of mass direct action. In fact, I usually think of voting and stuff like that as way down the end of the line, that what we have to do, we have to mass in our neighborhoods, in our communities, in our cities, and what they call extra parliamentary, outside of the voting process to gain popular political power, like has been done in so many other countries. However, I really am pretty mixed, in fact, towards the negative of confronting Nazis. They depend on us. I mean, they're just some, and I know they actually commit vicious acts, and there's all sorts of crimes against the people of color and what have you that they carry out on a regular basis. But they depend on good-hearted people, on liberals and on leftists, to show up to confront them to get the kind of publicity they want, and I'm pretty mixed about doing it.
I know that's an opinion that's held by quite a few people, but give me your response to this. I was born in Wisconsin. I'm educated in Wisconsin. Graduated of the University of Wisconsin Madison. Raised my family, my son, in this state. And for them to stand on the steps of the state capitol, thereby taking the authority of our state government to legitimize their message, I don't feel like I can let that go with unanswered.
I guess so. I guess what I've seen over the last few years, and when the Nazis have made it around to like Ann Arbor, Michigan, another liberal college town here in our state, and Indiana and in Ohio, that there's been groups that have gone out to confront them physically. And usually what they wind up doing, in fact, not usually, about 99% of the time, they wind up, the left groups wind up fighting the cops and the Nazis get this tremendous amount of publicity because, all of this is splashed over the front page. And that's where the militants are. That's where, then you would think that I would be the guy that would say, you go. Well, on the other hand, frequently cities have tolerance or diversity counter rallies, and rather than I would one hand go for the kind of the milder, gentler response.
Well, I had been participating in a forum. It was an anti-racist group in Milwaukee that has formed a coalition with anti-fascist groups and such in Madison and Milwaukee, and slowly discovered that they're basically what you're talking about in terms of confrontational. And when the forum discussion turned to the idea of free speech and does it extend to the Nazi groups, and I was the only one who believed that, whether we think so or not, the Nazis win in court every time. So if you want to fight that, you have to fight it legally. Otherwise, if you're telling me you're going to fight it on the street, then just as you said, you end up fighting the cops, and who gets the bad publicity?
Yeah.
So, there are other organizations in Madison, Wisconsin, Peace and Justice Network that are putting together a counter protest. But I thought I would mention it, and if anybody...
I'm glad you did, and it's always good to get reports from different areas. When is it next?
I'm sorry.
When is it?
Next Saturday, the 26th at 2:00 on the Capitol steps.
Well, call us on the 27th, James, or email me at least and let me know how it goes.
Indeed.
Thank you, James.
Thanks, Peter.
All right. Calling in from Kenosha, Wisconsin. Yeah. Or no, it wasn't. It's not Wisconsin. Whenever I say that, when I do national shows, I get all this email from people from the cheese state or something like that. It's not Wisconsin. It's Wisconsin. Sorry. All right. Here's Alan in Farmington Hills. Alan, it's Peter Werby. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Peter. This it's good to finally talk with you. I just moved back here from San Diego a couple of years ago. I used to listen to you way back in the old days.
Okay.
Anyhow, I guess there's so many things to talk about. I was really wanting to talk about the, you know, what's going on with, you know, gasoline and so forth, and the fact Mr. Raymond and his $400 million bonus that he got from Exxon, and the fact that Exxon hasn't even paid back the money for the Valdez spill and so forth. And I'm actually in Nancy Skinner's district, and we hope we're going to kick out
Joe Nolan.
You know, besides Joe Lieberman, we'll get Joe Nolenberg out of there, too.
The Joes have got the goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that's all wrong.
But, like I say, there's just so much stuff going on. You know, I've worked for the Gore campaign. I worked for Kerry. And it's just amazing. You look at some of these other countries, like Mexico, they just had this election. And the people go into the streets. They go into Mexico City, and they protest about you know, the election and the way it went. And I don't know why people, they just, for whatever reason, they don't have the ability to go and get out on the streets and protest. I mean, given the fact that we don't have an elected president in there for the last 6 years.
Well, Alan Gore knew that the election, and Clinton knew the election was stolen from them in 2000, and even they didn't protest. They went to the inauguration. Congratulations. I mean, yeah. You know, there's, speaking about Mexico, people are ignoring, because it's so dramatic what's happening in Mexico City, what's happening in the city of Oaxaca. There is virtually a revolution. People there also have seized the city and the you know, the official buildings, and it's they want to topple the governor that just put him right out. And it's worth taking a look. I do have a link to that on my website. If you go to my website, Peter Werbe, Werbe. You can read about this. Go down a couple. Well, Alan, welcome back to the Motor City.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for joining us. Let's go to Bruce. Bruce is listening in Greensboro, North Carolina. I'm glad to see we are streaming successful. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. Good to talk to you again. I've you know, called you a few times, I guess, over the last year or so. I wanted to call, you know, and talk about the ruling with Anna Diggs Taylor. I just, you know, a lot of the things that I'm reading, a lot of the people are trashing her reasoning, and they're trashing a lot of the rhetoric that she had in her ruling, and I don't know what kind of effect that's going to have later on, you know, as this goes back to court. I think there's going to be another hearing on the 7th, isn't that right? Or?
Well, there's one coming up. Let me just tell people what you're talking about. I'm sure most people do, but this is about a decision that Federal District Judge Anna Diggs Taylor gave, declaring Bush's illegal, unconstitutional, warrantless wiretap program to be just that, illegal, violating the 1978 FISA Act, and also violating the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution that prohibits unreasonable searches. So, I don't know, Bruce, when you say people are trashing her, it doesn't, everybody has an opinion.
Like, I've read several stories, one in the New York Times, where a number of legal experts are saying that she was replacing sound legal precedent with rhetoric.
Really? Where? And I didn't see that in the Times. Times itself gave her overwhelming support.
Okay. This was this is actually out of rawstory.com, and it quotes the New York Times of yesterday.
Huh. What, yesterday being Saturday?
Saturday, correct, yeah. It says...
Because it's Monday already, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess it is.
Yeah, it is.
But it says here, real quickly, it says Howard Basham, a Pennsylvania lawyer, says it appears that folks on all sides of the political spectrum, both those who support it and those who oppose it, say the decision is not strongly grounded in legal authority. So it's going to be interesting to see how this moves.
Well,
forward.
I don't know. The Times in a August 18th editorial ruling for the law says the ruling eviscerated the absurd notion on which the Bush administration's arguments have been based, that Congress authorized Mr. Bush to do whatever he thinks is necessary when it authorized the invasion of Afghanistan. which, by the way, people may or may not know, is going terribly, and the Taliban has reestablished itself in any number of locales. And why the United States is still fighting there, I'm not entirely clear. It gave sanctuary to Al-Qaeda, and the country should have been invaded. Those people should have been that did that, you know, Osama bin Forgotten and them, should have been taken out. And instead, they turned their attention to Iraq and let this situation go to hell. Four more Americans were just killed there today. Everything that Bush does turns to you know what. Bruce, thanks for joining us from North Carolina.
All right. Thanks a lot, Peter. Have a great night.
Thank you. I appreciate your call. You know, we have trouble with this little system here. It does not say next on this, so I'm just going to go to the person that's been waiting the longest, and it is Eric from Commerce. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, yeah, Peter, I was wondering about, you know how you were talking about the gas prices and how they kept on raising them and stuff?
Yeah.
Well, what we should do is if we were just ban gas one day, if people did not buy gas on one day, it would get stocked up at these big oil companies in Alaska and stuff like that. And then the prices drop at least a week, you know, because they wouldn't have anywhere to put the gas.
Well, you know, Eric, a number of people have suggested that, and it's not any kind of activity that we decide to do on a mass basis, because that's the only way that, that's the only power we have. I mean, they have the power of the government, the power of the media, the power of the courts, and so that type of activity you're suggesting is right up the alley of what I think could be effective, although I don't know if we can ever get everyone to do that. I mean, how do we put it forth? And I'm not sure that if there were, I mean, that's sort of what they call a general strike, and that's the most potent weapon that the people have, is that we stop carrying out normal activity in a given day. And I don't know. Would it work? People have suggested. In fact, I even think there has been days set, and I don't think it made a dent. But I'm not trying to discourage you or anyone else. All right, Eric, thank you very much. Okay, we still don't have our next sign up. Maybe what you could do, Al, is put it down that little box at the bottom of the screen like you did another time before when we were having the same problem. Here's Corey in Rochester. Corey, hi. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Doing Peter? Great. Yeah, thanks for calling.
Yeah, hey, in response to your gas, you were talking about, and like the last gentleman just said,
yeah,
everybody should boycott it. I feel if we did that, prices would just get hiked up more because they feel they got hurt.
I mean, they would. That is the old supply and, I mean, it's not on supply and demand. Supply, if it was just supply and demand, gas would probably be about 170 or 75 or something like that.
Exactly. But in the third world countries, when people take to the streets and they take a march to boycott something or to say, hey, we're not going to go for this, it gets acknowledged as, hey, these people mean what they're talking about. But I feel if we did that in America, it would be discarded as freedom of speech.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's
there's been quite a few marches in the last couple of years for this or that, you know, like the Million Man March or this or that.
And then a lot of anti-war stuff. And on the face of it, it looks like Bush just ignores it all. But they always say, we're not going to be have influenced by people marching in the street. But I'll tell you, every single criticism of the war in Iraq was framed by the anti-war movement. So that it's that old bumper sticker that says, if the people lead, the leaders will follow. And finally, you have some of these Democrats tepidly saying, well, maybe this isn't such a good idea. All right, I got to get to some commercials. Thank you very much. We'll be right back to get your calls. Hang on. Maybe we will talk. Yeah, I'll talk briefly about Support Our Oops when we get back.
Every Tuesday, get double shots of the best riffed rock.
The way you want it.
Rock. See, I told you there was a rational explanation.
Super Tuesday on 101 WRIS. Everything that rocks.
This is WRIF.com.
Come on.
Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much, and welcome to our final segment of Call-In at 1 a.m. Eastern Time. A couple of interviews. Gwendolyn Mink, she's written Poverty in the United States, an Encyclopedia of History, Politics, and Policy. She's talking about the welfare reform legislation that was passed by Congress 10 years ago. What did it do for poor people? What did it do for taxes? All that. Also, Gerald Horn, author of The Final Victim of the Blacklist, John Howard Lawson, Dean of the Hollywood 10. I actually start the interview was saying, you got to tell people what the blacklist is. You got to tell people who John Howard Lawson is. You got to tell people what the Hollywood 10 is. It's about the anti-communist crusade in the 1940s and 50s that took on the film industry. And it's an extraordinarily interesting interview. Really enjoyed doing it. So that's at 1 a.m. Now, support our OOPS here. James from Kenosha was talking about Nazis coming to the Madison State Capitol building to protest immigration and how offended he was, understandably, by it. But I'm surprised there's that many there because they've been joining the armed forces at quite a rate. There's this report that was published, and Scott Bearfield, a Defense Department investigator, this is from the U.S. Defense Department, says recruiters are knowingly allowing neo-Nazis and white supremacists to join the armed forces. Did you hear right? Wait a minute. These are supposed to be our finest. But let me say this again from the Defense Department investigation. Recruiters are knowingly allowing neo-Nazis and white supremacists to join the armed forces, and commanders don't remove them from the military even after we positively identify them as extremists or gang members. This sounds like prison. This sounds like what happens in prison. Mr. Barfield said Army recruiters struggling last year to meet goals. They said they don't want to make a big deal again about neo-Nazis in the military, he said, because then parents who are already worried about their kids signing up and dying in Iraq are going to be even more reluctant about their kids enlisting if they feel they'll be exposed to gangs and white supremacists. You think? They said also there is, where did I see this? Oh, yeah. The Southern Poverty Law Center says, quoting a Defense Department investigator, we've got Aryan Nations graffiti in Baghdad. Aryan Nations graffiti in Baghdad. Then you wonder why there's such a rate of civilians getting killed, you know, just splattered, essentially, just murdered, and why there's been so many prosecutions. If you want to see all this, you can go to splcenter.org, slpcenter.org. But also, is it worse or just another part of it? More than 100 young women who expressed interest in joining the military in the past year were preyed upon sexually by their recruiters. Women were raped on recruiting office couches, assaulted in government cars, and groped en route to entrance exams. A six-month Associated Press investigation found that more than 80 military recruiters were disciplined last year for sexual misconduct with potential enlistees. The cases occurred across all branches of the military and in all regions of the country. And if it's that high, if it's 80 of them, that's the ones that were caught. The AP found the Army, which accounts for almost half of the military, has had 722 recruiters accused of rape and sexual misconduct since 1996. It has about 70, 80 a year, right? But, most recruiters found guilty of sexual misconduct are disciplined administratively, facing a reduction in rank or forfeiture of pay. They're rarely prosecuted either by the civilian or military authorities. The increase in sexual misconduct incidents is consistent with the overall recruiter wrongdoing, which has increased from just over 400 cases in 2004 to 630 cases in 2005, according to a general accounting office. I mean, how many recruiters are there? There's 630 cases alone. The Pentagon has committed $1.5 billion to recruiting this year. They say they take this very seriously. Is there another one here? Yeah, this is amazing. I'm talking about what's his rank here? I'm missing it here. But anyways, Chris Magoe or something like that joined the Marine Corps in 2004. He deserted, went to Canada. He said He's chosen a lifetime of exile or possible court-martial rather than fight in Iraq or Afghanistan. It's not something I did on the spur of the moment, he said. It took me a long time to realize what was going on. The war is illegal. The Pentagon says deserters like him represent a tiny fraction of the nation's fighting forces. The vast majority of soldiers who desert do so for personal, family, or financial problems, not for political or conscientious objector purposes, said Lieutenant Colonel Brian Halfordy, a spokesman for the Army. Since 2000, according to the Pentagon, how many soldiers do you think have deserted? 10? 1,000? 10,000? I mean, he said he could observe 10,000. 40,000. 40,000 of our troops have deserted. Now, any of you guys that were in the service, any women that were recruited, I got to believe the majority of them were not, of you, were not attacked, or this would be a scandal larger than it is. But hate groups in the military, including neo-Nazi graffiti in Baghdad and military recruiters cited for misconduct. Any comments on that? 313-298-WRIF. Let's go to Wally. Wally is in Garden City. Wally, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Doing good.
I'm an over-the-road truck driver, and I don't hear many truck drivers call into the shows, and I'm from the Detroit area there, so I've listened to Riff for years.
Great.
A lot of what the general public don't understand on what these fuel prices are doing is the average truck, I'm going through about $2,500 in diesel fuel per week. That's $52,000 on average per year.
I was going to say, yeah.
And it's basically starting to take a large impact on the transportation industry. And if these, like you had said earlier, you know, a hike up to $5 per gallon would cripple this country in ways that the general public don't understand. It would actually shut down a lot of the smaller companies and cripple the larger trucking companies. And a lot of people don't think, you know, even to turn on a tap and get tap water is affected by a truck.
Sure.
These trucks have to take in the chemicals in the tanker to treat the tap water. I mean, anything you touch is off a truck. And if it crippled the trucking industry that bad, I believe this country would be in a very large bind.
Well, I think you're right, Wally. Do you own your own rig?
Not right now because of the fuel prices. Everybody in my family is basically truck drivers, and it's just getting to be a nightmare. I mean, $2,500 a week in just fuel.
That's amazing.
The average person, you know, if you go to the pump and drop $60 in fuel in your car to get to work, you know, that puts a crimp in your paycheck. But the average truck driver, if you're dropping $2,500 per week in your tanks to make a dollar every day, that's getting a little outrageous.
Well, when you go to truck stops or wherever and you talk to the other truck drivers, do they buy the story that that's just the natural functioning of the market, or do they know they're getting ripped off?
We know we're getting ripped off, and a lot of it, like another caller I believe had said, is taxes on the fuel.
Yeah.
And it's just miraculous that people don't make more of a fit over the fuel crisis that they are, because there's the fuel there.
Well, I'll tell you, Wally, part of the problem is that when you face, most of us just going to do our job, go home, see our families, enjoy ourselves, and we don't want to take part in a big political movement. So then all of a sudden, when it's kind of necessary, you got some bad traffic there. Let me just turn you down here for a second. The form of it, I mean, how do we do it? Say that every one of us wanted to protest tomorrow. We wouldn't know how to get a hold of one another. We wouldn't know where to show up. But what happens, for instance, as I said, there's been other times that people have reacted to fuel prices. And a couple of times in France where they centrally control it, the truckers just went out there, blocked everything, and suddenly they found out, hey, we can lower the prices. It was as simple as that. You know, the traffic is so loud that I can't even put your call up. So thank you, Wally. Thank you for listening, and get back to us. Keep us informed from time to time. You'll be our connection with the truck drivers, okay?
Okay, thank you. Have a good night.
All right, you too. Thanks for joining us. Towards the end here, as we go to this segment, we've got some open lines at 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. Chris is in Imlay City. Chris, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks.
Let me just preface this by saying I'm new to the area up here in Michigan. I moved from Florida and just started listening to your show. And there are times I actually want to turn you off, and I certainly laud you, even though I don't agree with your politics and your stance on a lot of things. But I certainly laud you for inciting people to think a little bit about a few things. But I wanted to ask you, more than anything, is exactly what side of the fence do you stand on, and what are your politics? You know, I hear you using... Well, I guess lately, and I don't agree with your stance on the Israeli thing by any stretch of the imagination, because you keep saying U.S.-made weapons are being used. We sell weapons and to a lot of countries.
Yeah.
And,
which is a tremendous problem. People are killing each other all around the country with the weapons that we produce. And that actually, and just one other thing, Chris, is the weapons that we pay for, because we give countries like Israel and Egypt and Jordan and some other countries these enormous this enormous foreign aid that comes out of your taxes and my taxes, and then what they do with the money is then they buy American weapons.
But those companies also employ American workers.
Well, let me tell you, there'd be much greater ways that they could spend the money. How about any number of things like restoring our infrastructure? We don't have to do it so we wind up with a mountain of corpses in order to keep industries going.
Well, I'm certainly not going to disagree with you there by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, I've been across the world. I've seen a lot of these countries, and certainly their politics are not ours. And it would be great if the world could just get along. But the flip side of that is, if Israel were to be attacked, would you have those same feelings about using our resources to help them in defense of their country?
Well, I don't have... that whole area has to come to grips, and I think Israel is the one that mainly has to come to grips with the problems that exist there, that they have great responsibility for. They thought... all these years, because of their military strength, it's sort of like the U.S. In fact, it's sort of like a mini-me U.S. They can do whatever the hell they want because they're the toughest kid in the block. We're the toughest kid in the whole block. They're the toughest kid on their block. And they've seen, though, that that ultimately they're just going to be facing these kind of threats, this kind of destruction, and now finally participating in a war that two-thirds of the people of Israel think either that Hezbollah won or that it was a draw. So what's going to happen next time? I mean, remember, the Arabs or the Arab countries can lose war after war. Israel can lose only one.
And I agree with that. And unfortunately for Israel, they are surrounded by people that are hostile to them.
Well, they're surrounded by people that are hostile to them because of their policies and what they've done. It's not like all of a sudden, these people said, "Hey, let's hate the Jews." The people came from Europe. They established this, this white settler country based on ethnicity and a specific religion. They ethnically cleansed the area. And they occupy the West Bank in contradiction of all international law and of tens of UN resolutions. And you know what? Tends to piss people off.
And I agree with that. But I don't think we just sit back here in the luxury that we have here in this country and try to apply Western politics and Western thinking from a country that's only 250 years old, based on this great piece of paper, the U.S. Constitution, and apply that to a situation that doesn't care and has not operated that way for thousands of years.
Well, I agree. But what we could do, because we do have the leverage, because we're paying for it all, is to demand that peace with justice occur. Because if there's not justice, it's that old slogan, no justice, no peace. Chris, I've got about 5 minutes left and about six calls, so call us again. We can continue this conversation next week or whatever. Here is Rory. Rory's in Garden City. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Rory Prater.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, I want to talk about the neo-Nazi thing.
Why do you laugh?
Because I think it's retarded.
What is, neo-Nazis?
No, they're retarded enough to, go under.